The Horicon Marsh provides habitat for, I think, over 300 species of birds and, of course, all kinds of other critters and probably hundreds and hundreds of plant species as well. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today to start the show, Liz Herzman, and she is a wildlife educator for the DNR, Department of Natural Resources, at the Horicon Marsh Education and Visitor Center. Brought her in to talk about the marsh and to let us know about some events that are coming up. You may have visited the marsh. Maybe you haven't. What, if you did, what did you like about it? Or what did you like most? How important are wildlife refuges to us? Join in the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page a question. And if you got a marsh photo, we'd love to see that as well. Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Again, we'd love to hear from you. And Liz Herzman, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, I'm happy to do so. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you know, I love the marsh. A lot of people love the marsh. Yeah. It's got the most interesting history, and I'm not sure that everybody is familiar with that history. So can you talk about that? How did it get going? It had a strange beginning.
Yes. Well, I mean, you could go on and on and on about the story and the history of Horicon Marsh, and it really is just this amazing natural resource, and the people that come and enjoy it don't understand everything that Horicon Marsh has been through over the years. And I mean, I think to start the story, you have to go back 10,000-12,000 years ago when the state of Wisconsin was covered in ice with our glaciers. And of course, our glaciers formed and shaped many of our unique landforms across the state, and Horicon Marsh is no exception. As those glaciers came through, they scoured out the basin, and they scoured out that area that soon would be Horicon Marsh. As it came through, it also left moraines, so piles of dirt and debris that had been left behind, and as the glacier started to melt, that meltwater filled in the basin, but that moraine kind of blocked in the basin. So before we were a marsh, we were actually known as a post-glacial lake, which is why we're now a member of the National Scientific Reserve Trail. And after that, the moraine kind of burst through, and we became a marsh that we know today. And at that point, we had this real profusion of wildlife where we had tons of those really amazing Ice Age animals that you think of, so mastodons and woolly mammoths and saber-toothed cats, and they roam this area, and it brought people to the marsh. And so we've got about 10,000 years of Native American history throughout this area using the resources of Horicon Marsh. And then, of course, we have our European settlers that started coming through in the mid-1800s. Town of Horicon, first thing they did was they put in a dam, and they dammed up Horicon Marsh, created a lake. They had a sawmill and a grist mill running, and it was progress to them. Unfortunately, it didn't work out so well. The farmers surrounding the marsh were kind of angry. They sued, and the dam ended up only being in for about 23 years. After that, again, we had wildlife really respond. Horicon Marsh was known as a premier duck hunting marsh. People came from across the country to hunt ducks at Horicon Marsh. We had private hunting clubs. We also had market hunting that was happening at that point in time, which was unfortunately not unique to Horicon Marsh. It was happening across the United States. It's where we had mass slaughter of many different species of birds and fur bearers. And within about 25 years, the animals that called Horicon Marsh home were completely wiped out. And at that point,
amazing. What time period was that?
That would be between kind of the 1850 and early 1900s is when we saw that real lack of conservation and that real shift to market hunting. And it's also when we started seeing steep declines in many of our bird species and even some extinctions like the passenger pigeon, as we basically killed these animals to extinction for a few particular species. So it was a dark time, not only in Horicon Marsh's history, but also in the species or around the United States. But it really kind of led to the very first forms of conservation as well. So good things came of it.
Yeah, really. I mean, then at some point there were even attempts to drain the marsh.
Yeah, exactly. So once the birds were gone, people were like, well, how do we get people to come to Horicon Marsh and to the surrounding area? And so they thought if they could ditch and drain the whole marsh, get to the rich organic peat soil that was underneath, they would have the most productive cropland in the Midwest. And so they did that. They started in 1910, and it took them about 4 years to dig a 14-mile ditch down the entire length of the marsh and then many lateral ditches to drain the backwaters. And they attempted for a few years to farm it. It didn't work all that well, and after just a few years, the farm fields lay abandoned. And at that point, kind of one of the worst things actually happened. And as that peat soil started to decompose, it gets really hot, and it can spontaneously combust. And so from 1920 to 1932, Horicon Marsh was known to flare up into these peat fires that you could see from even 30 miles away. The glow from the marsh is what we've heard from historic accounts.
And you couldn't put those out.
No, they're not like your wildfires that you see out west. They're just these slow, smoldering, burning fires, much of it deep underneath the marsh in that peat soil. And so, I mean, within 10, 12 years, 10,000 years of peat accumulation was literally up in smoke.
Ah, man. Well, but obviously, it's come back.
Right. I mean, every story hopefully has a happy ending. And we had some amazing conservationists in this area, spearheaded by Lewis Curley Radke, who's now a member of the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame. It was kind of his mission to bring forward a Restore Horicon Marsh campaign. And he fought in the Supreme Courts for a number of years. And eventually he got the Horicon Marsh State Wildlife Refuge Bill passed, which basically gave the state of Wisconsin money to start buying up sections of Horicon Marsh for a state wildlife area. And Horicon Marsh is actually the very first state wildlife area in Wisconsin.
And how many acres do we have in the marsh?
So the total marsh is about 33,000 acres, and it's actually split in ownage. The southern third of the marsh is owned and operated by the Department of Natural Resources as a state wildlife area, and the northern two-thirds of the marsh is owned by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and operated as a national wildlife refuge.
And, you know, all these years, there always were threats to the marsh. Are there still threats to the marsh?
There is always threats to the marsh, and probably one of the biggest ones that we see today is water quality issues. I mean, water is, of course, the lifeblood of Horicon Marsh. I mean, everything needs it, and many of the species that live there need good quality water. And there's a lot of things that are coming into our system that are not necessarily good for our water quality.
So that's one of the big things, and that's kind of the DNR and I guess the federal. What federal agency would it be?
It would be the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Fish and Wildlife, of course. Role or job to try and protect that water.
Exactly. And I mean, there's a lot of components that go along with that as far as the management of Horicon Marsh, but we're certainly trying to work with a lot of the surrounding owners and the water quality and also just vegetation management. You had mentioned at the beginning of the show that Horicon Marsh is the largest freshwater cattail marsh in the contiguous United States. Which, you know, when you're the biggest of something, a lot of times people think, oh, yeah, that's great. But when you're talking the biggest of something with only one species of cattail, well, it's not necessarily diversity that we like to see out there. And so part of our job is also cattail control and helping some more native vegetation come into the marsh.
Yeah. Talking today with Liz Herzman, who is a wildlife educator for the DNR at the Horicon Marsh Education and Visitor Center. The Horicon Marsh, a real treasure for our state, and it's great to have her come by to talk about it. Isn't it a fascinating history? I've always marveled at the history of that marsh, and I've really had a lot of fun visiting it as well. You may have an experience to share about the marsh or maybe a question about it. I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. And as a matter of fact, Mike posted on the Facebook page that Horicon's one of his favorite places in Wisconsin, and he would like to encourage people to take an afternoon walk in and just sit down and sit still for a couple of hours. And as he says, and I've experienced this, it's amazing what will come to you if you're patient.
So true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, talk about the, it's probably a good time to talk about the different ways that you can use the marsh.
Absolutely. I mean, the beauty of Horicon Marsh is there's so many opportunities out there, whether you want to do outdoor adventures or indoor adventures. There's certainly something for everyone. One of the really cool and unique experiences that we have that we just opened at our visitor center over the last 6 months is our new Explorium, which is brand new displays and exhibits. They're hands-on, interactive, and they basically tell the story that I just recounted of Horicon Marsh. So it gets people that true understanding of what Horicon Marsh is all about, but then it also encourages people to get out and enjoy Horicon Marsh, whether that's going out and canoeing or kayaking or fishing or hunting or trapping or birding or wildlife photography, whatever it is that interests people, many, many of those options are available at Horicon Marsh.
Sure, you can use the water. There are many, I don't even know how many, hiking trails.
Yes. So there's probably, let me see, about 10 to 12 miles worth of hiking trails, and that's just designated hiking trails. There's also a few of our dike systems and some of our roads that go through Horicon Marsh that are also available for hiking during different times of the year.
I biked around the marsh once, and it was kind of a fun, it was a fun bike, although I think several miles I was in a really stiff wind. Which wasn't much fun.
Yeah, unfortunately at Horicon Marsh, there's not a whole lot to block the wind, so it's typically a little breezy over here.
Yeah, that is for sure. Well, let's go to Tanya in Madison. Tanya, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for the Horicon Marsh, and thanks for everything that you do there. My daughter and I go every May between Madison and Fond du Lac to go up to do graves up in Oakfield and Fond du Lac. And we travel to Fond du Lac a lot, and I tell you what, the marsh just pulls your heart into it. We can't go by that exit without getting off and driving. And when we drive through so slow, and we've had the opportunity over the years to stop on particularly not nice days and get out and just, like you said, sit there. Something that I noticed, too, that I just thought of was the photo areas. We noticed that there were places that you could, there were blinds to take photos at. And if you could answer, how does a person do that?
Sure. So that's a great question. We've got a couple of photography blinds on the state wildlife area, and those are basically a first-come, first-serve. So if you want to go in them and there's nobody else in there, you're more than welcome to. There's also a photography blind on the refuge, and that one, I believe, is you do have to call and reserve it. So you would call the headquarters for the National Wildlife Refuge and just say, you know, I'm interested in checking out this blind and reserving it for this particular day and time, and they would let you know if it would be available.
Very
excellent. Thank you so much for everything you do.
Sure, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Tanya. Let's turn to Tom next in Menominee. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. I just have a quick question. It's kind of silly, but back in 1997, I acquired a turtle from my son. His mother wasn't going to let him keep it anymore. And I gave it to the DNR up there because I lived up there at the time, and I gave him the whole setup and the aquarium and everything he was in. And the lady who I had given it to said that they were going to release it back into the, you know, into the marsh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry for wasting your time, and I was just wondering if she knew anything about him, if he had got back in the marsh.
That is a good question, and I started here in this position in 2009, so I don't know for sure if that actually happened or not. I trust that the lady who told you that would be true to her word, and typically that is something that we can do. We don't usually like to release a lot of wildlife back into the marsh, especially not knowing where it's been before. But sometimes that
sometimes
is
sometimes it's done.
Scenario.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Tom, for calling. And there, you probably get, or you may get this kind of request from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got an animal they would like to release.
Right. And it's really not legal to do that on either state wildlife area or the National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay. We have, by the way, you can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We have Well, I'm wondering about the birds right now.
Yes.
I was on my, you know, on my little jog. I call it a slog, more like a slog around this morning, and I'm listening to all the bird songs and in my neighborhood, and I'm thinking, oh, Horicon Marsh must be just brimming.
We're getting there. We're slowly getting there. We're waiting for a few more south winds, but we have a very nice variety of birds that are here at this time. This is by far my favorite time of the year to be at Horicon Marsh because, you know, every day you step out there, you have no idea what new bird's going to be there, what's calling, what's singing, what you're going to see. And we take advantage of that. And so we have some amazing partners around, and we host a bird festival. It is actually the oldest bird festival in the state of Wisconsin. We're celebrating our 19th year this year. And it's a full four-day festival where basically we are celebrating and searching for as many birds as we can. And we've got activities that are for any level of birder, whether you're just beginning and trying to get a feel for it or whether you're an expert and want to find as many species as you can.
Do you have anything relating to bird calls?
Yes, we will. So we've got, when we have tours, there's free hikes. There's also some registration bus tours. We've got expert guiders that are great for birding by ear. But I'm also going to be leading a program this year that's basically called Tune In, and it's going to be focused all on your woodland songbirds, so your warblers and your vireos and your flycatchers. And it's a fun program where it's interactive. I'll play a call, and you get a controller, and you can actually, we'll give you a multiple choice, and you can guess which one it is. And it's just really good practice for a lot of those trickier calls that are out there, and maybe from those warbler species that you only get to hear for 2 weeks out of the year, and then they're gone, and you don't get to hear them again until next year.
Well, it's just I was frustrating this morning. I'm hearing what, you know, I'm hearing this one song, and I cannot identify the bird, and it just drives me crazy.
Well, when it's the first time you hear them again for the year, it's a familiar call. I was standing out there this morning with a goldfinch singing. I was like, I know that call. But it took me a minute or two to, oh, yeah, that's a goldfinch that's singing his little head off. But when you hear it for the first time again, it always takes that minute. I mean, at our house, we, starting in February, put in our bird call CD, and we are listening to it nonstop just to prepare ourselves for the spring season. So we have a little bit more background of that, those bird calls that we'll be hearing soon.
Yeah, that's really not a bad idea
at
all.
It works. You'd be amazed how well it works.
Oh, I've got to consider that. Betsy and Madison, we'll get to you in just a second. I want to remind everybody that Liz Herzman, our guest today, is a wildlife educator for the Department of Natural Resources, works out of Horicon Marsh Education and Visitor Center. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just to let you know, at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guests will review the top political news of the week, including ongoing coverage of the presidential election. And I want to remind you that you need to join us tonight at 6 for NPR special election coverage of the Indiana primary, streaming online at WPR.org. So something for you to think about for tonight. Right now, though, I hope you're thinking about the Horicon Marsh and all the wonderful birds that are there and the wonderful plant species. And have a question for Liz Herzman of the DNR? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. And let's go to Betsy in Madison next. Betsy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, Larry. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Betsy.
Hi. I'm going to be getting my Wisconsin Master Naturalist certification in June this year, and I would love to be able to come to the Horicon Marsh to fulfill some of my hours of volunteer work. Will you have work that I could do there?
It's always a possibility, and we do have a number of volunteer work days as well. So if you contact me and maybe we can get you my information, I'd be happy to talk with you about some potential projects.
So how do people get a hold of you, Liz?
So you can, best would probably reach me by phone. My office number is 920-387-7893.
Wait a minute, 920?
387.
Okay.
7893.
Okay, 920-387-7893.
Correct.
There we go.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. And, you know, you folks, you also have the Horicon Marsh, there's a website.
There is. So we have a really amazing friends group that helps with a lot of our work here and volunteer work at the center. And so they have a great website that has all of our different events, which is horiconmarsh.org.
Yeah, really easy to find that one for sure.
Yep.
We have Joe in Heartland up next. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I grew up about 20 miles from the marsh. This would have been in the 60s when I remember we would always go along Highway 49 and watch all the geese in the marsh. And at that time, they planted the plots there with crops that I believe to attract the geese. And I know it's packed natural, so I'm just wondering what the thought process was at that point in time with planting those fields.
Sure. So I get this story probably about 30 times in the fall when people are coming and wanting to see literally the skies being black with Canada geese, which was something that you would have seen in the 60s and even into the 70s because at that point in time there was baiting that was happening and crops that were planted for Canada geese to try and get them to stop at Horicon Marsh. And it worked. It just worked a little bit too well. And so they were seeing about 500,000, a half a million geese coming through the Horicon area, which is a lot of birds, and why people always remember seeing that many birds. The problem is when you get that many into an area, the potential for disease outbreak or, as we were talking before, water quality issues with the amount of droppings that are
going into the water. Think about the amount of goose poop is what I was thinking of, 500,000 exactly. Geese all pooping away.
Plus, you know, the geese, once they ate out the area that was intended for them, that was planted for them, well, they had to have food somewhere, and they spread into surrounding farmers' fields, and they weren't too thrilled about that. So they did start some operations where they were trying to get those geese then to move on to other surrounding wetlands, and it did work eventually. And we're at a much better number now, probably about half that, anywhere between 175 and 250,000 is what we get through sporadically throughout the fall, which is still a good number of birds, but not necessarily the giant clouds of black that people are used to seeing a number of years ago.
Still, it's a lot of fun, and you know, coming in the evening or right just toward dusk.
Yes. So that especially in the fall when we see our real big goose migration, that last hour or two before sunset is the best time, not only for geese but sandhill cranes, waterfowl species, all coming back into the marsh to roost.
Yeah, Jill, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Ken in Mayville. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how you doing? I still live in Mayville, which is right on the marsh there, just outside near the center. Actually, I love it there. It's a beautiful place. Being right on the marsh, we get to see a lot of sun animals flying over. There's always a plethora of birds. We had a Cooper's hawk nesting in one of our trees a couple years ago. See some wood ducks the other day landing in the river. And I'm always ferrying a tortoise or two or turtle across the road at some point during the summer. But, yeah, it's a fun place. Do a lot of biking with family hiking and cross-country skiing in the wintertime. It's a wonderful place out there.
I'm glad you're enjoying it so much. It is a wonderful place.
We may have... Thanks so much for that call. Let's turn to... by the way, let's talk a little bit about winter, Liz. Can you really do some cross-country skiing, for example, in the marsh in wintertime?
You can. We don't groom any of the trails, but you're more than welcome to go out and cross-country ski. And actually, in the wintertime, it's a really unique experience because starting December 1st, the entire marsh actually opens. So both the refuge and the state wildlife area, you can go just about anywhere, where during the spring, summer, and fall, many areas, especially on the refuge, are closed because it is set up as a bird refuge, and so you can't go to all the different areas. But during the winter, you do have quite a few months that you can go and explore anywhere you would on the marsh, and cross-country skiing is a great way to do it. Just know that we don't groom any of the trails.
Patricia in Madison up next. Hi, Patricia.
Hello, Larry. Last time I visited the Horicon Marsh was just before they were putting in wind turbines in the area, and I think Bill Volker was the naturalist then, and he mentioned their concern, you know, what was going to happen to the birds with those turbines. I was wondering if they have seen any effect of that.
Sure, and that's a very good question.
Good question.
And one that I get quite frequently, because it is pretty obvious that those wind turbines are right along the marsh, and people were very concerned about the flyway. And they are doing some studies and some research just to kind of see what sort of effect they have had on the flyway. And right now, we're really seeing that there's a little bit more of an effect on bats than there is on birds, and they're still doing that research to kind of see. But we haven't seen any huge changes or effects, which is a good thing,
right?
But we're still waiting for that research to come in.
All right, thanks, Patricia.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Jan in Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Jan, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry.
What can we do for you?
I was just wondering, I know she talked about there was hunting available years ago. Is there still hunting on the marsh that's available for anyone, or is that not a possibility in today's world?
You asked, hunting was the question?
Yeah, is there hunting?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, as I was saying before, Horicon Marsh back in the day was a premier duck hunting marsh, and people were coming across the country, and it's still a very important part of our history here at Horicon Marsh. And so on the state wildlife area, the southern third of the marsh, it is open for most forms of hunting, for waterfowl, duck and goose, for deer, for upland game, pheasant, and small game as well, in many areas. There are a few obviously closed areas as small refuges, but yes, absolutely. The National Wildlife Refuge, they do have a little bit more stricter guidelines on hunting. They are closed for waterfowl hunting except for a one weekend where they do a youth learn to hunt, but they do also open it up for deer hunting. So it really depends on what it is you're looking to hunt, to know the regulations and just make sure that you do that. But certainly hunting is a very big part of Horicon Marsh today.
I wondered if you, for information on where in the marsh and so forth, you have that up online, I'm sure.
Yep, so that would be under the DNR website. So if you go to the main page for the Wisconsin DNR and then type in Horicon Marsh as a keyword search, you'd get right to our page with a lot of that information on it.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I had many great experiences hunting geese and ducks at the Horicon Marsh.
As have I.
Yeah, Dennis in Red Granite, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Hi. A few years ago, we were in an antique shop near Beaver Dam, and there were some very wide, very long boards with upturned ends and some kind of old ski binding.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told they were marsh skis. Was being told the truth, or was he pulling my leg? I've never seen anything like it.
Sure. He was not pulling your leg. He's actually telling you the truth. There are things out there that people were using to try and commute as best as possible across the marsh, and marsh skis were one of them. They're these huge, basically cross-country skis, but they're much longer and a little bit wider, and people would use those quite often, especially when out duck hunting, to help them retrieve their ducks that were kind of in some of the more mucky areas or just very shallow areas of the marsh that you couldn't get a skiff or a boat into. And we have a number of pairs here at our education center that have been either donated to us or that we've collected along the years, and we definitely showcase those in some of our new exhibits. And it's a really cool and unique kind of Horicon piece of history.
Yeah. Thanks very much. And, I want to go back to the to your building, because that is a wonderful center.
It is. We're really lucky. It's opened in 2009 to the public for education programs. We had a facility, obviously, for many years as well, but this is kind of the brand-new center. And then this last year, August of 2015, we opened those brand-new exhibits, the Explorium, which is a really fun and unique experience, again, to learn the story of the marsh. I mean, it's fully hands-on. When you walk through there, there's a giant walk-through glacier to tell you about the history of how the marsh was created. There's a life-size woolly mammoth. There's an airboat simulator in there, so you can learn a little bit about how we use airboats to do management. So, I mean, it's really a cool and unique experience for kids and families and anybody who's interested in the marsh.
We had that caller earlier who mentioned he was from Mayville, and I wonder the communities around the marsh, Horicon as an example, or Mayville.
Right.
I'm sure those communities have done a lot of good things for the marsh itself.
They have. I mean, all of our surrounding communities have been very supportive of everything that we do here. And we wouldn't be able to run the education program that we do and the center that we do without the buy-in from our local communities. And so I think the people around here really understand what an amazing treasure and resource we have. I mean, literally right in their own backyards. I mean, there's really nothing else like this in the state. And so people are really accepting and supportive and appreciative. And I think they've come to enjoy those resources even more as well.
Yeah. And Roseanne wondered, we were talking about cattails earlier.
Sure.
And she's her general question is, are they invasive?
So that's a good question. It's kind of a multi-tiered answer because some are and some aren't. There's multiple species of cattails, and there's also a hybrid of the native species. And unfortunately, what we're starting to see a little bit more of is that hybrid species, which is kind of termed invasive / aggressive, and it really kind of takes over areas after a while. And so that's one of the reasons why we're doing such extensive cattail management on Horicon Marsh.
Ray and Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your guests. Growing up near Horicon Marsh in Milwaukee and outside of Milwaukee, I remember the skies being black with geese and everything else. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so all of you have come a long way with management, and I'm happy, and so are many others with the scientific part. And no matter what anybody else may think in this state, science is a big part of management that's needed. Anyways, I have two quick things. The invasive species, what water quality control is there with any type of invasive species? I know that's a more of a controlled area. You don't have a lot of boats and things coming in, obviously. And also about endangered species. What is on record right now at this point in time with those two? And I'll take your comment off there.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Sure. So as far as invasive species, I mean, we've got quite a few, both land and aquatic. There are boats that are allowed in the state wildlife area. Obviously, fishing, hunting, getting out there sometimes you need a boat, so it is accessible. We don't see a ton of aquatic invasive species aside from the cattail. There's a handful out there. Some of the big ones when you're talking water quality are carp. Carp are a huge issue in our system, and so that's the biggest one probably for water quality issues as far as that goes. And let's see here, what was it?
And invasives and endangered.
Endangered species, thank you for that. So yes, we do see a number of endangered species on the marsh. Probably one of the most visible at certain times is the whooping crane. They have been doing better, and we do see them out on the marsh at certain times. We do even have a few that are potentially nesting out there, so not necessarily with the correct species, but they are in the area, and we're hoping for good things as far as nesting whooping cranes on the marsh.
Let's turn to Deb in Menasha next. Hi, Deb. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm just wondering, because I've been through there in the summer, and you have these big signs up that say, do not run over the snakes. Well, people run them over anyway, which just annoys me.
Sure.
But I'm just wondering why you don't close off the roads when the snakes are at their peak and just have people go to the visitor centers and then walk from there.
Sure. And the location that you're talking about is up on the National Wildlife Refuge, so I can't speak too much about why they don't close it, but a lot of it is just public access and letting folks get out and enjoy it. We hope that most people that are going there are going to be respectful and try to avoid the wildlife that sometimes will be on the roads. But again, I can't speak to why they do or don't close. I just know that they are at least trying with the signage to make people aware of what's out there on the roads.
Yeah, yeah. It's too bad, really.
It is.
Deb, thank you for pointing that out and bringing it up. This year, the DNR is commemorating the centennial anniversary of the Migratory Bird Treaty. What did that treaty do?
Yeah, so that was a landmark treaty that basically put protections in place for all migratory bird species. And it was something that came about, of course, because of the market hunting and some of the declines that we were seeing in many bird species. There were so many birds that were being overhunted for food, especially during that time, and also for their feathers, especially some of those unique feathers like on egrets and whooping cranes. And so those huge declines really spurred this act so that we could put protections in place for migratory birds. And so this will be the 100th year that was put in place, and so we're celebrating all things birds this year through the DNR and the department, and we've got a lot of activities to go along with that. One of those, of course, being our bird festival coming up this coming weekend.
Tell us more about the festival itself.
Sure. So it's a really fun time if you love birds. And like I was saying before, there's really something for everybody. So we've got beginning birding hikes that are free that people can come out, learn a little bit about binocular use, how to use field guides, and then go out on a short hike with some guides. We've got boat tours. The Bird Festival is this amazing partnership between many of the different folks around the marsh. So we've got Horicon Marsh Boat Tours who run pontoor boat rides on the marsh. We've got Fish and Wildlife Service who runs the National Wildlife Refuge. And then Marsh Haven Nature Center, which is a privately run nature center at the north end of Horicon Marsh. And all four of us kind of work together with our bird club and have these different events. There's some that are bus tours that have expert guides that are taking you to the different hot spots around the marsh. And then there's others that are hikes. There's a bird lab that we're going to be doing at our facility from 9 till 4 on Saturday, which is for kids and families to come learn a little bit more about birds. And then probably one of the highlights of the festival is our bird banding. So at one of our locations for both Saturday and Sunday, we have licensed bird banders that will be coming, trapping birds in mist nets, banding them, and telling people a little bit more about their history, where they've come from, and where they're going to.
So can it be an all-day thing for people?
It can be a four-day thing for people.
I know.
But yes, absolutely. There really is something from early in the morning all the way through night. We've even got a night sounds hike that people can go on where we learn a little bit about some of those secretive marsh birds that have odd and unique calls, and some people just don't know what they are, and they're kind of creepy sometimes. But we're going to kind of shed some light on what those different calls are, what's calling at night.
And food? Are we gonna starve to death? Or
hopefully not. There's definitely food in the local communities, but then Marsh Haven Nature Center is having a brat fry for birders, so there'll be lots of good food. And then that Saturday night, if you're interested, we always do a birds and beers kind of social gathering at one of the local establishments, and you can talk birds and life stories and kind of fun stories from the day and get some food while you're at it.
Birds and beer.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a great...
It's a good combination.
Do you have t-shirts that you sell that have birds and beers on them?
Not birds and beers, but we do have t-shirts available for the festival itself, which we sell every year. We've got t-shirts and pins and a variety of other things to commemorate the festival.
Well, Liz, you are a delight, let me tell you. And it's so much fun to talk with you today. And I hope if you'll have me back, I will... We'll get back to you and have you on again.
Sounds great. I'd love to.
All right. Thank you, Liz. Liz Herzman, wildlife educator for the Department of Natural Resources at the Horicon Marsh Education and Visitor Center. And doesn't that bird festival sound like fun, the 6th through the 9th? There's also a Wildflowers for Wildlife on May 14th from 9 to 1, which we unfortunately didn't mention. But I'll tell you what, go online if you're interested in wildflowers. For wildlife, I hope you'll go online to Horicon Marsh Center website and take a look at what's going on that day, which is my birthday, as a matter of fact. So that's May 14th. Well, Liz didn't say anything. You know, we were talking about food. She was talking about brats. She didn't mention anything about pizza. So since she didn't, I will. Coming up next, we're going to talk about making world-class pizza right in your own home. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.